Okay, good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for coming after lunch. I am not Tim Philly, so if you were expecting Tim to give this talk, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I hope I can be just as entertaining as Tim would be, or more, and then if I am more entertaining than he is, be sure to tell him. So today, I'm going to start on a little bit more of a serious note. This photo in the title slide is from the California wildfires. And so the direct result of this, or what we engage with directly, is that there's a huge human impact from wildfires. The destruction of property, loss of life, but there are also effects that most people don't think about, and that is the input of black carbon into the atmosphere, its increased deposition to soil, and the effects that it can have on soil carbon as a reservoir. And so today, I wanted to talk to you about how pyrolysis temperature and plant taxa affects the reactivity of black carbon and of soil organic carbon in a northern forest soil. Brief outline of some of what I'm going to go through today. So background on black carbon, soil organic carbon and priming, stable isotope use, results, including chemical characterization, CO2 flux, and priming effects, and some brief conclusions. So, what is black carbon? Black carbon is the product, the highly condensed aromatic product of the incomplete combustion of biomass under low oxygen. And when we discuss, so when I talk about combustion here, I'm talking about pyrolysis, not complete combustion or loss. I'm talking about the production of a substrate. And so here we have the schematic of wood stump, and what you would find in it is lignin and polysaccharides, but once they undergo or are exposed to fire, they become dehydrated, start to become condensed, and you have the formation of polycondensed aromatic carbon rings. And so here at the end is what you expect to find. Black carbon is very stable in the environment. It's also ubiquitous, and it makes up a significant portion of stable carbon as a part of soil organic matter. And what you can see here from this schematic from Schmidt is that compared to other components of organic matter, such as plant-derived or microbial components, black carbon is far more stable than those, and also far more stable than its original plant parent material. So this is very important when we think about long-term carbon stabilization. But we currently don't know what those mean residence time estimates are, and that's because decomposition and stability varies with source and pyrolysis temperatures. Black carbon can also influence the decomposition or rate of decomposition of soil organic carbon, and in the business, we call this a priming effect. So this is a cartoon. It's taken from Whitman. And microbes are represented as Pac-Men. Pretty fun. Soil organic carbon is in a gray circle, and black carbon is represented as a black circle. So in the case where we have an increase in decomposition of soil organic carbon, two things can happen. You can have increased activity just by the presence of black carbon being there and stimulating microbes. You can also have an increase in SOC decomposition with co-metabolism. So as microbes attempt to decompose black carbon, they also decompose SOC at a higher rate. But this is short-lived. It's very rapid, usually happens right after deposition. In the case where black carbon decreases decomposition of SOC, you can have substrate switching in which microbes prefer black carbon over SOC. You can have a dilution effect. Sometimes this happens in agricultural systems where you add it at rates that far exceed SOC content. And you can have the absorption of SOC to black carbon surfaces because black carbon can be activated at higher temperatures. This, however, is delayed in last months, and because of this, there's no consensus across the literature of what these net priming effects are. One of the issues and one of the reasons we can't do this is because often we can't distinguish between two sources. So you don't know what's coming from the soil, what's coming from the black carbon, and stable isotopes are a very good tool in order to distinguish between two sources. And so if you have a highly enriched substrate that's enriched far over natural abundance, then you are able to simultaneously distinguish between black carbon and SOC decomposition and also track it through the environment. So that was my most entertaining slide. Goes downhill from here. So our approach, what we did to solve this problem was we created or produced black carbon from two different plant species, so a gymnosperm and angiosperm respectively. This means that their original wood content is completely different, and that they might actually turn over at different rates in soil. So this means a lot in terms of black carbon stability and also its effects on carbon in the soil. And so these saplings were grown in a labeling chamber, and they were uniformly labeled. So just for reference, jack pine has an atom percent value of 2.3. Red maple was 3.8. This is far above natural abundance signals. And so if anything happens, we should be able to track it. They were then pyrolyzed at 2 years old under low oxygen at 200, 300, 450, and 600 degrees C. After this slide, I'm going to refer to any of the samples as their species, so jack pine, followed by the prefix T, as well as the combustion temperature. So it would be JP or jack pine T200, if I'm referring to that treatment. One thing to note about the starting chemistry is that red maple is higher in soluble sugars than phenols, and so these are very easy to degrade. And so the thought is that this will carry over to a certain point in the black carbon chemistry. And jack pine is higher in lignin and nonpolar extractives. So lignin compounds are going to be much more difficult to degrade. These nonpolar extractives could be potentially toxic. So keep that in mind as we go through. So the soil in this study comes from the temperate boreal forest boundary. So at the University of Michigan Biological Station in Pelston, Michigan. What's significant about these sites is that they're currently undergoing species dominance shifts. So it started off as white pine dominated. It's moving toward aspen and red maple dominance. And this area is also prone to fire. And so it's highly vulnerable to these increased frequency in fire. So this is very important for us to look at. But the reason this site is so important is because with this species shift, it's important to look at taxa too, because that's going to change as well. So we did a 300-day laboratory mesocosm incubation. A lot of people are familiar with that, but if you have questions about it, I could talk to you about it later. But our specific aims with our stable isotope use was to determine the net decomposition and stability of mean residence time of black carbon across temperatures and between taxa. We also wanted to determine which black carbon physiochemical characteristics features help us predict its decomposition. So what about black carbon can help us predict how it will decompose in the environment? And we need to relate these black carbon physiochemical features to SOC priming effects, because that physiochemical or these physiochemical characteristics has huge effects on SOC turnover, and to determine temporal trends in SOC PE, because there are temporal trends. So before we jump into any of the mineralization data, I want to show you a little bit more about the black carbon chemical characteristics, looking at our 13C NMR data. And so 13C NMR, it's going to show up probably a bit more as talks go on this afternoon. But why it's a useful tool is that it shows us what the chemical or the electronic environment looks like around a single carbon atom. And so it can tell us, are there oxygens, are there hydrogens, and that gives us an idea of carbohydrate content, maybe some of your aromatic carbon and aliphatics. And so here we have jack pine and red maple wood and T200, and what you can see is that they look very much the same. So you have quite a bit of, So you have a strong carbohydrate signal, you have some aliphatics here, and you don't have the development of aromatics. However, as you increase the production temperature, we start to see the development of these aromatics over at 160 ppm in the chemical shift. We also see that we start to lose our carbohydrates and aliphatics downshift. Thank you. Very much. Okay, one more time for everybody. So here are our carbohydrates, Here are the aromatic carbon, and as you can see, they start to develop both in jack pine and red maple. However, they have a different transition temperature. So jack pine begins to transition at around T300. Red maple transitions to aromatic carbon at T450. This means that red maple retains a lot of its carbohydrates up to T300. That does not happen in jack pine. And so that's very important moving forward, because that will affect the way that it degrades in the environment. And so our first data slide here is looking at net black carbon mineralization, and we can see that it's very much dependent on its production temperature. So this is the percent of black carbon mineralized over the 300-day period, and we can see that decomposition decreases with increasing pyrolysis temperature. This is expected. This is something that's been shown in the literature. We also have taxa effects. This is something that we also expected. We have a taxa effect at wood and a taxa effect at T300. But what I really wanted to point out here is that at T300, where you have this transition for jack pine, where it becomes more aromatized, it's actually much lower than T300 in net mineralization. So what does this mean in terms of its stability? Well, its mean residence time is also dependent on its temperature of production. As we'd expect to find, mean residence time increases with increasing pyrolysis temperature. But we also have some of those taxa effects, very significant at T300 to T600, where red maple turns over much faster than jack pine. And so this is important, because if we consider our earlier chemistry, that red maple is higher in soluble sugars and phenols, and jack pine has more aromatic carbon, we would expect that the jack pine would turn over at a slower rate or be more stable than red maple. Also, these mean residence times are actually on the conservative side. So this is more decadal to centennial, where in the literature we have anywhere from decadal to millennial. So we also wanted to see what black carbon characteristics help predict its turnover. And so this is some new data. What we did was we measured the DOC, or the total leachable black carbon, because that is the pool that is thought to be the most reactive. And so we're going to compare this to anything. We want to compare it to that fast cycling black carbon C. And so what we did was we took our net black carbon turnover, and we estimated the fast-cycling C pool that turns over on the order of days. And we wanted to correlate this with what would be turning over in the black carbon anyway. And so what we find is we have a positive correlation between fast C-cycling and total leachable carbon. And this is something that you would expect to find. And it's new. I don't know if anybody's shown this before. Somebody could correct me if I'm wrong. But this is very surprising to us, but it's also very insightful, because we have an idea of where the reactivity is occurring in the black carbon. So leachable C may be a good predictor of decomposition. Another thing we wanted to do was look at aromatic C content in DOC. And so a good way to do this is to look at the specific UV absorption, and this is because aromatic carbon selectively absorbs UV light. So if you have a higher absorption, then you have more aromatic carbon. And so we have more aromatic carbon as you increase temperature. However, there's no correlation with fast C cycling, which we expected to be inversely proportional. And that's because T300 has a lower aromatic carbon content than T200 and T450. So again, we're seeing this transition for both species being reflected even in our correlation data. And so just to show you how T300 is affecting this, I drew some lines so you can see that they're squiggly, and this is why they don't correlate. But that may mean something for our SOC priming effects. So one of our first questions we wanted to answer was, what was the net effect of adding this black carbon to this particular soil? And so priming here is represented as percent SOC mineralized of the control SOC mineralized, and neutral priming would be at the 100 dotted line mark, positive priming would be over that dotted line. Anything below it is negative priming. And so what we see here is we have net negative priming effects. So adding black carbon to these soils decreases SOC decomposition over the total period of the incubation. What's also interesting is that T300 shows the lowest or the greatest suppressive effect on SOC decomposition. So again, we're capturing where these transitions in soluble carbon to more stable carbon in our priming data. But this is the net effect. One of the things we wanted to look at was the temporal effects or temporal priming effects. And so what we found was that, I should step back for a second and let you know, this is a priming effect rate. And so this is done by subtracting the control SOC decomposition from the treatments. And so it gives you a rate difference. So anything below zero is negative, anything above zero is positive. So what we find here is that early on in the first week, jackpine has a negative priming effect, negative going toward neutral. For red maple, however, we have positive going toward negative. And this is likely because those soluble sugars that are available in the first few days are being used, quite possibly being co-metabolized with SOC, and so you have this decomposition or increased rate of decomposition in comparison to jack pine that's mostly lignin and aromatic compounds. However, there's high variability. So if we look at this first day, those error bars are huge. And so that makes it difficult to find our differences from zero. And so we tried to figure out, you know, where was this variability coming from? And so one of the things we wanted to do was look at what's happening in the specific blocks. So in this study, we treated block replicates as if they were laboratory replicates, and we all know what the problem with that is. In the field, you could sample 2 meters from somewhere and the soil looks completely different. And so that was reflected in our block priming data. This is just T600. And as we can see, on that first day of sampling, there's huge variability in the priming effect. So it's very important if you do a study like this in which you use blocks as replicates that you consider this. So there's an interacting plant taxa, soil property, and disturbance effect shortly after black carbon addition that should be considered. I'm running out of time, and so I'm gonna wrap it up. The last thing I'll show you is, and we could talk about this later, but everyone talks about how these laboratory studies are highly idealized. And so you take so many factors out of laboratory studies. And so how do you relate this to the field? Well, what I'm showing you now for the first time is data from a collaborative field study. So this entire thing was a part of a huge study where there was a laboratory incubation and a field incubation. And what we can do now is compare the laboratory to the field. And what we find is that both the lab and field show negative to neutral priming for the treatments that were used. So that was jackpine wood, jackpine T300, and jackpine 450. And what we also see is that the variability in the field is represented in the laboratory with large error in total SOCPE. So this is very important. This tells us that, yes, laboratory incubations may be idealized, but this information might be useful and may carry over to the field. And so some conclusions, there was a slide you didn't see, but BC pyrolysis temperature dictates its magnitude and decomposition, and its mean residence time is decadal to centennial in this study. Leachable C content is a good predictor of the magnitude of BC decomposition. Net PE is negative. T300 treatments are the most negative. This tells us that plant taxa is important. The way it changes as it's paralyzed is important. It's going to affect the way black carbon turns over and the way SOC turns over. Early taxa-dependent PE direction. So we don't normally pay attention to the first week, but you disturb soils. And when you disturb soils, you cause them to behave in a different way. And so this early taxa PE is very important when we talk about C loss or C stabilization. And there's the interactive soil property taxa and disturbance PE effect. So these are things we hadn't considered before. And with that, I want to thank you for your attention. thank you for like bumbling through this with me because we had some technical difficulties. I want to thank the funding sources, NSF, PCCRC, and those are some of my collaborators in that lovely photo. Hopefully you'll forget about me looking like this. That's not me anymore, that's the past me. So if you have any questions later on, I will be very happy to answer them.
So we have time for some questions.
Oh, good.
Yeah, go. When you do pyrolysis, you have a lot of carbon light.
Yes.
Which have different isotopic signature, and probably when you in the acid soil, and I guess it was acid soil,
it is.
A lot of carbonates are going out, and this CO2 is not from soil organic matter, but you cannot really differentiate it, and it also shifts very strongly the isotopic composition of CO2.
So the black carbon in this, and what I probably should have been more clear about it, is that it's uniformly labeled. It's when we did elemental composition and a few other analyses, we confirmed that the black carbon was uniformly labeled. We also found that any carbonates in the black carbon was actually negligible, and so it wasn't actually affecting the pH. And throughout the incubation experiment, we also mentioned, we took subsamples of the soil and we did a pH measurement, and so pH is not affecting it on the macro level, but I'm not saying that there aren't micro pH effects, because there possibly are. We just can't measure them yet. So does that sound good? Hi.
Your reachable carbon, what form of carbon do you think that is?
We think it's a combination between we do have an aromatic C content, so there's some aromatic carbon that's in there. It's probably free aromatics. There's quite possibly some soluble sugars in there. We don't have that data yet, and I kind of like can't talk about that because that's a collaborator did most of that, but we're speculating right now that in the leachable carbon, you possibly have some very low molecular weight compounds that are affecting how SOC is turning over in the beginning. We didn't pre-leach the char before we put it into the soil. Everything was after pyrolysis. We just had enough sample to run all of the chemical characterization separately. So it was made in abundance so that we could do all the studies together and also run all the chemical characterization first. So there wouldn't have been, the DOC leaching actually didn't happen until after the incubation studies.
Thank you.
Great, thank you.